Wednesday, February 22nd, 2023. You are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from Mile High City here in Denver, Colorado. And we are back for another week of talking sports with a dose of common sense. Hey, happy Wednesday to you. I hope that your week is going well. Hope you, your family, your friends, you're all staying strong. You're all staying healthy. Hey, you're halfway through the week. You get through the day. You're on the downhill side. You're headed to another glorious weekend. And yet, how was this past weekend for you? It was a little tough, wasn't it? I mean, it was the first weekend that we didn't have any football. We didn't have any football to even look forward to. It was kind of hard. I'll be honest. That was a little tough to have no football. I mean, I don't know, unless you count the XFL, and I don't. It was a little bit tough. I mean, at least we had the Daytona 500 and the NBA All-Star Weekend to soften the blow of no football. But honestly, it was still rough. Daytona, by the way, was wild. Recce Spinhouse won the longest Daytona 500 in history as the race ended up going 212 laps with all the caution laps. What's that? Oh, sorry. That's my bad. Old habit. Ricky Stenhouse won the race that, like I said, had two late, really, really big crashes. We all know, though, NASCAR loves those crashes. So no surprise that they have crashes when every single race they try to create crashes. I mean, that's what they want. So that's what they get. And then we had the NBA All-Star Game that saw Boston Celtics forward Jason Tatum score an NBA All-Star Game record 55 points in a game that, I guess if you didn't watch it, the best way I would describe it is that it looked like a bad game at the rec center when everyone's tired and just wants to go home. You know how they used to say that the NFL was kind of tough to have an All-Star Game for? Same with like hockey. Because of all the collisions, you can't play the same way. It just doesn't work. But the NBA was still fun. Yeah, that fun is gone. It is long gone. That weekend was terrible. Giannis Antetokounmpo's team beat LeBron's team like, I don't know, 500 to 490 or something. A white guy won the dunk contest. That league, by the way, is doing a bang-up job on generating fans. The arena in Salt Lake City, it wasn't even full. The only way that weekend could have been better is if the Stars actually sat out for load management and just watched from the bench. As it was, they stood on the floor with their hands on their hips and watched other players playing because there wasn't any hustle to the game whatsoever. Not a great post-football weekend, for the record. Hey, before we jump in today, just want to remind you, be sure that you are stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every single week. We have new articles going up every week. We have links to the podcast there. We have links to the video there. And yes, we have links to the Daily Dose gear. And someone asked this week about Daily Dose gear. It's really easy to find. Go to DailyDoseSports.com. You will find a link there where you can find t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, coffee mugs, whatever it is that you may need. So be sure that you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every week where you can find everything. But you know, every week we put up articles. I put up an article on Tuesdays, usually has a more local flavor. Young Jimmy will post articles on Thursdays. And you know, if you saw this last week, he posted a little bit about some of his favorite in-person sports memories. Very interesting stuff. Be sure you're stopping by DailyDoseSports.com every single week. Hey, today on the show, I'm telling you right now, we have a jam-packed show for you today. Because as we mentioned, the NBA All-Star festivities were this weekend, but the NBA trade deadline just passed. And we had some teams making some very big moves there. We're going to look at some winners and losers over there. Plus, college hoops is heating up. Which teams are putting themselves in a position to get those number one seeds in the national tournament? And while we know the NFL season is now complete, we're going to be looking at a few questions that we have for what could be a very interesting NFL offseason. Plus, we will have the return of the Daily Dose Top 5 today. Haven't had a Top 5 in a few weeks. We had some controversy last week at Super Bowl 57. I'll go ahead and warn you ahead of time. That was not the first time. But first, let's jump into a few stories coming out this week in the world of sports news. Of course, the NFL season is over. But we did see the last of the NFL teams without a head coach go out and make their hires. Now, we touched on both of these hires briefly last week on the Dose, but they actually did become official just after that show went up. The Indianapolis Colts have hired Philadelphia Eagles offensive coordinator Shane Steichen to take over for Jeff Saturday or whatever was going on in Indy. Of course, Steichen did a phenomenal job of building that Eagles offense over the past few seasons. The job he did with quarterback Jalen Hurts, nothing short of outstanding. He turned that offense into a ground and pound monster that could put up big plays, took him all the way to the Super Bowl. Good stuff from Shane Steichen. And I'll tell you this right now, I cannot wait to watch Nick Foles line up and run those quarterback counters like Jalen Hurts does all the time. I think that's going to be a lot of fun for all of us to watch. They get in that short yardage formation, and Nick Foles walks to the line and just plows right up the gut. That's going to be a lot of fun. I think Shane Steichen should do just fine with Indy. Maybe he gets some help. The Arizona Cardinals also pillaged the Eagles. They hired their defensive coordinator, Jonathan Gannon, to take over the mess that is that franchise. Now, Gannon is only 40 years old, but remember, he turned that Eagles defense into a quarterback-crushing machine. And when you think about it, the Cardinals have some talent. They just need to be pulled together. And maybe Jonathan Gannon can make that defense very strong as well. I mean, if he does, then all he has to do is figure out how to make quarterback Kyler Murray stop playing Call of Duty at night and actually watch some film. Oh, and also, I don't know, maybe grow a foot taller. And if he does those things, I'm telling you, the Cardinals might really have something going. One last hire of note to talk about in the NFL, and that is where Kansas City Chiefs offensive coordinator Eric Bieniemy has agreed to take the same job with the Washington Commanders. Of course, there is a ton of speculation as to why in the world Bieniemy can't get a head coaching job. Why did he have to settle for this job? Is this a racial thing? That is what the worldwide leader in sports is telling us. This is racial. Stephen A. Smith was screaming about this. This must be a racial thing. Now, that's possible. I mean, sure, we saw, you know, some other coaches get hired this year, but maybe it is a racial thing. I don't know. Or, and I'm just lobbing this out there again. I've said it before. I'll say it again. Maybe it is because we don't know what happened in Kansas City. We don't know what Bieniemy was doing. We don't know if he was even making any calls. Was it Bieniemy calling the plays for the Chiefs? Was it Andy Reid? Or was it just Patrick Mahomes pulling this stuff out? I have no idea. I do know this. We all saw Patrick Mahomes show no respect for Bieniemy earlier in the year when they had a disagreement on the sideline, and Patrick dismissed him like he was a little boy. So that kind of concerns me a little bit. And then there is another side that the worldwide leader in sports never wants to talk about, and that is Bieniemy's past, which includes beating up a female security guard. I've noticed that no one brings that up. Hey, Eric Bieniemy, you can go make the Washington offense look like the Chiefs offense. And if you do, I promise you, people will be knocking down your door. They will be trying to hire you. None of that stuff will matter. But you're going to have to prove that you are more than just the beneficiary of Reed and Mahomes in order to make a team want to take a risk on someone that does have some questionable baggage in his past. You can overcome it, but you're going to have to prove it. Will he do that? I don't have any idea. I'm kind of fascinated to watch, but I don't have any idea. None of us do. We don't know. But I know that people really like saying, no, this has nothing to do with that baggage. This all has to do with the racial. I don't know that it does. Bieniemy has a chance to prove himself. Now let's see if he does. Moving over to the NBA, in the wake of that high-profile missed call that went against Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James last month, NBA Commissioner Adam Silver said officials are absolutely held accountable and that they are disciplined for making these awful errors. Here's what Silver had to say. We don't publicize discipline for officials. We don't think that would be appropriate. But their assignments are affected by the quality of their calls, whether or not they progress into the playoffs. And then, round by round, it is impacted by the accuracy of their calls and their demeanor on the floor. So there is a system for overseeing and making those judgments about officials. But more to your earlier point about getting the calls right, that's not a new issue. Now, we all remember, LeBron James was fouled in the closing seconds of the tie game between the Lakers and the Celtics back at the end of January, but the foul was not called. Boston went on to win the game in overtime, and we know LeBron threw himself to the ground, rolled around, ripped out what was left of his hair, the whole nine yards. The NBA's referees union posted a public apology a day later on their official Twitter account for getting the call wrong. But one of the criticisms of how that moment played out was that there was no mechanism available to the referees to adjust that call. And Adam Silver said the league needs to look at that. Should there have been a replay for such an obvious infraction that wasn't called? Now, here's my problem. One, we don't need more replay. We need less. NBA replay makes NFL replay look fantastic by comparison. Two, I don't know that I really believe Adam Silver when he tells me that referees are disciplined in any way. Have you watched an NBA game recently? Let me change the question. Have you watched an NBA playoff game recently? Because Adam Silver says, hey, if you're a bad ref, you're not going to get to the NBA playoffs. Says who? I've watched the playoff games. I've watched the finals games. The reffing there is horrible. Don't tell me you have the best of the best. Hey, you got to be the best to get to the playoffs. If that's your best, what's your worst? The NBA officials are terrible. And again, I know it's the job of the commissioner. You got to pretend it's good. It's just that we all have eyes, right? We can see it's bad. Don't tell us it's good. We know it's not. Stop lying. Staying in the NBA, according to The Athletic, the NBA is exploring the possibility of setting a threshold that would require players to participate in an as-of-yet unspecified number of games in order to be eligible for awards like Most Valuable Player, Defensive Player of the Year, all those awards. That's kind of funny, isn't it? Because we've said that on the dose a number of times. It's kind of cool to know that the NBA obviously is listening to the Daily Dose. I think that's kind of sweet. I'm going to put that up as a win, that the NBA clearly listens to what it is that we have to say here at the Dose. As things currently stand, it appears that proposal could make its way into the collective bargaining agreement. And remember, that is set to expire at the end of next year. Now, we'll see if it actually makes it in there. But it's going to be worth keeping an eye on, because I think you could end a lot of the players sitting out night in, night out if you put some financial stipulations upon it, more than just a per-game thing. Hey, this might affect your first team, second team, third team, and a lot of your incentives are connected to that. So maybe that would get these players, you know, to go out and do their jobs, to go out and play, to go out and actually play in games. I know that's a crazy thought. Speaking of that, Charles Barkley believes the NBA is headed for a lockout at the end of next season. And he says things are going to get ugly. Speaking with the media prior to the All-Star game in Salt Lake City, Barkley was asked about Kevin Durant, Kyrie Irving, James Harden, all asking for a trade from the Brooklyn Nets. Barkley went on to talk about how all these players asking for trades so quickly, after signing those massive contracts, he says it's only hurting the league. Add in the fact that superstar players are constantly sitting out games for load management. He says it's a recipe for a lockout. Here's what Barkley had to say. You can't take my money and then say you want to divorce me in 6 months to a year. You can't take all my money and then say, hey, I want a divorce. So I'm pretty sure that's the next thing to come out of the CBA. I don't think there's no doubt in my mind that these guys are going to get locked out, because you can't treat owners and fans like crap, which these players are starting to do now with load management, and then demand to be traded. Remember, like I said, that CBA is going to end next March, a little over a year from now. And as both the league and the Players Association are working on a new CBA, that current CBA started back in 2017 And it is going to end, and it is going to get real, real interesting, because we know these owners, sometimes it feels like they're kind of getting taken advantage of, and they don't have the guts to step up and say anything. Charles Barkley is even saying, hey, I think these owners are going to push back a little bit. You're signing these guys to these big deals. They don't even want to play, and then they just have to be traded anyways. I think that is hurting the product. And you know what? Complain about Barkley. Say Barkley's a jerk. Say he's too outspoken, whatever. Charles Barkley has never been one to do anything other than speak his mind, and I absolutely love it. Chuck is a guy after the Daily Dose's own heart. No question about that. Finally, John Rahm narrowly held off Max Homa to win the Genesis Invitational on Sunday by shooting 17 under. But as usual, with the world of golf, the big story was Tiger Woods actually making the cut because of three straight birdies on Thursday to finish his round. Unfortunately for Tiger, you have to play that well for more than just one day. But he shot a 3 over 74 to finish the first two rounds at 1 over, and that was enough for him to make a cut. And we know when Tiger makes the cut these days, everybody goes crazy. And given the layoff of 7 months since his last competitive round of golf at the Open, Tiger making the cut, that was absolutely huge news. And still, to this day, it's 2023, Tiger making a cut still gets everyone so excited in the world of golf. We want to see Tiger. Everyone wants to see Tiger. However, Tiger making the cut was the big news. But then we had even bigger news, because it turns out that Tiger Woods is a huge misogynist.
What?
Yes. It seems that on Thursday, Tiger, who was paired with Justin Thomas, outdrove Thomas. And then he walked over to Thomas and he snuck a tampon into Thomas's hand as a joke. Well, that joke went viral. And of course, there are always some people out there that can't take a joke. There are always some people out there that are looking for reasons to be offended. Well, in her column last Friday, USA Today writer Christine Brennan clutched her pearls and took offense to Tiger's joke. Here's what Brennan had to say. Really, Tiger? You're a 47-year-old girl dad, in quotations, who still pulls juvenile and sexist pranks like an immature schoolboy? This life of the party, Brennan continued, when the biggest name in the sports history is giddily spreading misogyny down the fairway, it might just confirm a woman's suspicions about golf and send her to any one of the scores of other sports that she can play for the rest of her life without running into a dude playing a juvenile tampon joke. Well, there we have it, kids. Tiger Woods is a misogynist. Now, for one, let's try to keep this in mind. Tiger didn't put the tampon into a girl's hand. I don't know if she grasped that. I mean, I would understand if Tiger had gone over to a girl, said, here's a tampon, I outdrove you. That would be offensive to females, but he handed it to a guy. I don't know if he got that. You know what I wonder? I wonder if Christine Brennan was writing this same stuff after Tiger was caught cheating on his then wife. Probably not. But then Tiger was playing a lot better than two. But here's what I find odd. Tiger gave Justin Thomas a tampon because he outdrove him. Thus, the joke for Tiger, he's saying that Thomas didn't drive as far as Tiger. So Tiger is saying, you drove like a female, I drove like a male, here's a tampon, ha ha ha, hijinks ensue, right? Sorry, but I just wanted to explain the joke to Christine. She's obviously a little bit lost, she didn't understand this. I'm trying to explain the joke. But who is going to tell Christine Brennan that they literally have women's tees on every single golf course on the entire planet that are shorter in distance than the men's tees? Nobody? Nobody gonna say that to her? Nobody gonna mention that to her? Okay, never mind. My bad. Enough with the tampon joke, Tiger. You don't have to make these jokes. I know you didn't mean for anybody to see it, and I get it. Never fun when somebody calls out your joke and makes fun of you and says it's a misogynistic thing. Don't do that anymore, Tiger. In fact, just go back to actually mistreating women, chasing women around, doing all that stuff. Because the media seem to be better with that stuff than they are with you playing a simple joke with a friend. Oh, goodness. We're just so fragile these days. We're just so easily hurt. Tiger had a joke, and it was at the expense of, I don't know, Justin Thomas or Women Can't Drive Us. I don't even know. I don't know. But Christine Brennan, I bet you are not fun to hang out with in any capacity. And I bet that right now, for whatever reason, you're probably just under your bed sobbing at the top of your lungs. Okay, coming back. We have a lot to get to today. We are going to be looking at the winners and losers of the NBA trade deadline. Who are the college basketball teams that are going to be getting those coveted number one seeds in the national tournament? Plus, we have a few questions to keep an eye on for that NFL offseason that don't look now, but it's like already here. We still have a lot to get to today on the Daily Dose. So like I said, the NBA All-Star Weekend took place this last week over the weekend in Salt Lake City, and we are now past the halfway point of what is always just such an insanely long season. We know if you really wanted to help NBA players, just knock off about 25 games and things would probably get a lot easier for players and refs. But you also know owners aren't going to forfeit that money. However, just prior to that All-Star Weekend over Super Bowl week, we had a flurry of activity at the NBA trade deadline. Now, sometimes at these deadlines, there's a lot of talk, a lot of sports talk. What if this team did this? What if this team made this big move? And then nothing actually takes place. That wasn't the case here in the NBA this year. A number of teams were very aggressive and pulled the trigger on some big moves that completely changed the landscape in the NBA this year. So right now, here are our winners and losers from the trade deadline. And I know this took place like a week and a half ago, but we've also taken a couple minutes and looked at how this is affecting a lot of different teams. Sometimes these things aren't as they appear on the night of these trades. First up, our first and our biggest winner has, of course, got to be those Phoenix Suns. The Suns made the biggest move of the season. They trade dynamic forward Mikal Bridges. And that does hurt. Cam Jackson, Jay Crowder, and four unprotected future first-round picks for superstar Kevin Durant. That is a big move. Now, if you listen to The Dose, you know that I picked the Phoenix Suns to go to the NBA Finals this year, but the Suns have been kind of sleepwalking all season. They've been sitting right around fourth, fifth seed in the West. However, this move, no, it makes the Suns the favorite to win the whole thing. Sure, the Suns don't have the depth that you may need to win it. And I'm going to say this, we can all expect either Durant or 37-year-old Chris Paul to fall and break a hip at literally any second, shouldn't we?
I've fallen and I can't get up.
But make no mistake, this does change the league. The Suns are not a favorite. Imagine you have Chris Paul, you have Kevin Durant, and you have Devin Booker on the floor at almost all times. Hey, the Suns are going to be a tough out in the playoffs. Kevin Durant is so deadly. And Devin Booker is so deadly. Those two guys alone are going to fill it up from mid-range. And now you're going to have to run around and try to chase people at the three-point line. You're going to be giving up cuts to the basket. Hey, the Phoenix Suns have some serious firepower. Do they have depth? No. Are they at risk of injury? Of course. But the Suns are the big dog in the NBA. Thanks to that big trade for Kevin Durant. I'm going to give out our first loser, though. And I'm going to give it to Los Angeles Lakers guard, Scottie Pippen Jr. Now, the Lakers went out at the deadline, and they made a ton of moves. Gone are Russell Westbrook, Juan Toscano-Anderson, Patrick Beverley, Damian Jones, Thomas Bryant, Kendrick Nunn, and in are Rui Hachimura, Mo Bamba, Jared Vanderbilt, Malik Beasley, D'Angelo Russell, and Devon Reed. Well, you might notice in all that movement, I didn't mention Scottie Pippen Jr. I like some of what the Lakers did. My only problem with it is that I think this just maybe makes them a playoff contender. Maybe they can make the playoffs now. I don't know that they can really do much else. And they have once again strapped themselves financially and draft pick wise. So I don't know that these are great moves for the Lakers, but they definitely upgraded their roster. However, that's not who I give the loser to. I think the Lakers upgraded a little bit. I do give it to Scottie Pippen Jr., the guard for the Lakers. Why is he a loser? Because, like I said, the Lakers did get Malik Beasley, who you might remember at one time they said was having an affair with Scottie Pippen Jr.'s mother. And now Scottie Pippen Jr. has to dap up Malik Beasley every single day. He's got to slap the hand that slapped the... Well, you get it. What I'm saying is Scottie Pippen Jr. has to be reminded over and over that his mom, well, I don't know how else to say it, but she's kind of a skank is what I'm saying. Sorry, Scottie Pippen Jr., you're a loser here. Another team that has been running in mud all year is the Los Angeles Clippers. They also, they've kind of been hovering around that 4-5 spot over in the West, and they never show any signs of improving. So the Clippers went out, and they made a bunch of moves. They bring in Bones Highland. They bring in Mason Plumlee. They bring in Eric Gordon. And it looks like they could be getting one more piece, although I'm not sure it's going to actually help. We'll talk more about that in a minute. They shipped out Luke Kennard, John Wall, and Reggie Jackson. Now, the key for this, Bones Highland, I don't know exactly what to make of that kid. He seems a little bit tough to manage, but he can score points. Defensively, he's a liability. But other than that, the Clippers got better defensively. And with Eric Gordon, they get better from the perimeter. That's not a bad thing. That should help as the Clippers try to make a run this postseason. I will give the Clips a winner. I'm going to give a loser to another team that made a blockbuster trade at the trade deadline. Because the Dallas Mavericks shipped Spencer Dinwiddie, Dorian Finney-Smith, and 3 future draft picks to the Brooklyn Nets for Kyrie Irving and Markieff Morris. Hey, we've been saying all year, hit the dose, that Mavericks star Luka Doncic, he needs some help. He needs it badly. How many years can you have a superstar like that and you don't help him out, and you're just losing these prime years of his career? There's no doubt Luka will benefit from having a point guard like Kyrie to carry some of the load, to take some of the load off of his back. But remember this, the Mavericks already had a good point guard in Jalen Brunson, and they let him walk away in free agency. Maybe you should have just kept him. That might have been better than getting Kyrie. And we all know Kyrie Irving is a walking time bomb. He will play nice for a few minutes, but you know he's going to explode because that's just who he is. You can't change your spots if you're a leopard. Kyrie is that leopard, and he's in trouble. Here's a question for you. Name the last season that Kyrie Irving was truly at the top of his game. 2018? Maybe 19? He hasn't even played more than 60 games since 19, and it's been well under. And it isn't just that he's been hurt. It's that he's left all these teams that he's been on, and that he leaves them all on such poor terms. And of course, when he leaves, it's never his fault. It's never anything he did. Well, that team disrespected me, and that team did this, and that team did that. It's never him. I know that Dallas got a superstar to help Luka, but I honestly don't know if they truly helped themselves long term at all, because I don't trust anything Kyrie does. And if you're a teammate of his, I don't know that you can trust him either. I give the Dallas Mavericks a loser. I will give a winner here, sort of. I'm going to give a winner to the Western Conference in the NBA. But again, only sort of. Think about this. The Phoenix Suns, the Denver Nuggets, the Dallas Mavericks, the Minnesota Timberwolves, the Utah Jazz, the Los Angeles Clippers, the Los Angeles Lakers, they all went out and made a move to improve their team at the deadline. I'll say this, the Western Conference is going to be nasty come playoff time. The problem is this conference is also a loser because good luck. The West is back to being a bear. If you are going to advance through these playoffs, you're going to have to find a way to beat each other. And that Western Conference is no joke. You still have Memphis out there, very talented, although I don't kind of like the direction they're trending. Hey, the Western Conference is a load. It's going to be very tough to come out of that conference. I give the Western Conference both a winner and also a little bit of a loser. I'm going to give a loser to the Charlotte Hornets again, just like every other year of their, existence pretty much. As great as Michael Jordan was as a player, I can never figure out what that franchise is doing with him as the head decision maker. The Hornets traded away Mason Plumlee, and they traded away Jalen McDaniels, and they got some second-round picks in return. Okay. Well, Plumlee and McDaniels were going to be free agents, so I guess you got something for them, but we all know that you're not going to do anything with those picks. You're going to botch them. So I guess you sort of got something, but in reality, you got nothing. Why can't the Hornets ever just make a deal that you go, wow, that's a good deal. That is a solid deal. Charlotte is on the rise. They're doing good things. They never do. They just make crazy, insane picks. I don't know. Michael Jordan, he just doesn't seem to be able to bring what he had as a player to the front office, and the Hornets just always seem like they're just massively confused in every single thing they do. I'm going to give our final winner, and I'm going to give it to the Milwaukee Bucks, who was, by the way, my pick prior to the season to go to the NBA Finals from the East and to win the whole thing. Well, the Bucks have been trying to get back to full strength with the return of Chris Middleton. He had been unhealthy. He's starting to come back and play some minutes. When you have Drew Holiday, you have Chris Middleton, and you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, that's a really, really tough lineup. But here's the thing. The Bucks were involved in that big trade with Phoenix, and they actually were the ones that got Jay Crowder. Well, Jay Crowder opens up some things for Milwaukee. Because he's so versatile, he is going to allow Milwaukee to play small ball with Crowder, Holiday, Middleton, Joe Ingles, and Giannis. Or Milwaukee can go big with Middleton, Giannis, Crowder, Brook Lopez, and Bobby Portis. Hey, this is really making me feel good about my preseason pick. Phoenix and Milwaukee are who I picked for the finals. I'm feeling real strong right now. We'll see if that holds up. But I really like what the Bucks did. They become a much more versatile team, and they are going to be a matchup problem for whoever they face in the postseason. I like what Milwaukee did a lot. I will give one final loser, and I'm going to give it to a player. You know, sometimes we talk about players. We talk about Peyton Manning. End of his career, we kind of saw him fall off a lot. We talk about Tom Brady. Started to slide a little bit, but it was more progressive. It wasn't just this fall off the cliff kind of thing. Well, I'm going to talk about a player right now who has actually fallen off a cliff in recent years. Remember when Russell Westbrook was one of the top performers in the NBA? Man, are those days over. Dude is a shell of his former self on the floor. He can't shoot. He doesn't remember how to pass. And he doesn't seem to be accepting of this new role. He's just like, no, I'm the man. I don't know why you guys don't recognize it, but I'm the man, and I'm still taking the big shot whenever I feel like taking the big shot. So now dude is a shell of his former self on the floor. Oh, and by the way, he's also turned into a huge whiner off the floor too. Russell Westbrook complains like once a week about how his wife and his kids always have to hear criticisms about him. People at school are making fun of my kids. People at school are saying things to my wife. People in their job are talking to my wife. Yeah, that must be right. Other athletes never deal with that stuff. Like I would imagine, like Christian Laettner, he probably never heard that. I would imagine Bill Russell, his kids probably never heard anything. Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, they never got any grief whatsoever. That must be rough for you, Russ. You're the only one going through it on the planet. Also, remember a few years back when Russell Westbrook said that a Utah Jazz fan was making racial taunts at him? He went on to say, Utah fans are the worst. Well, that Utah Jazz fan actually sued the Jazz for kicking him out of the game. And then when Westbrook said that Utah Jazz fans were the worst, you can imagine Jazz fans probably didn't take that too well. Well, at the trade deadline, the Lakers sent Russell Westbrook to Utah, which would have been absolutely wonderful to watch. Russ having to go to that arena full of people that he hates and who in turn hate him, but the Jazz didn't even want him. They bought out his contract, allowing him to sign anywhere else. So now, Russ is going to sign with the Los Angeles Clippers. Hey, this makes some sense, doesn't it? Because the Clippers don't always play hard. And we know Russ can't shoot a lick, but he'll play hard. So Vegas will be looking at the Clippers as a contender now, right? Well, they were a plus 900 to win the title before Russ. Now they added Russ. Can you guess what Vegas adjusted that to? Yeah, that's right. Still plus 900. No change whatsoever. And for having no impact whatsoever, Russell Westbrook, you are the biggest loser. Let's move over to the world of college basketball. Do you realize that we are just about 2.5 weeks away from Selection Sunday? That is coming quickly. The national tournament is coming so fast, and we all know the tournament is wild. It's unpredictable every single year. But there's usually like a favorite of some kind every single year, right? This year, I'm not even sure we have that. College hoops this year, there is not a big favorite in the running. It is going to be wide open in the tournament because anyone could honestly win. Want proof? Here's some proof. Who would you place right now as the number one seeds in the tournament? Yeah, it's not that easy because top teams keep getting beat. No one is unbeatable. Everyone can lose on any given night. So right now, if we were making, here at the Daily Dose, our tournament, the teams that I would make my number one seeds right now, I have a few picks, but I also know they could drop a game here or there, and I'd have to bump them down too, move them to a two, move someone else to a one. So let's take a look at who I would have as my number one seeds right now. But remember, these could end up moving because we still have rivalry games coming. And we still have conference tournaments coming. So you know more losses are coming for these teams. But right now, here is who I would put as my number one seeds. Right now, as the number one overall seed, I would have to place the Alabama Crimson Tide. I know they lost to Tennessee last week on the road. And Tennessee is very good. But then Alabama bounced back in very impressive fashion. They stomped Georgia over the weekend 108-59. Head coach Nate Oates, he is proving to be a top coach in the country, even when he faces other top coaches. The Tide have 5 wins over ranked teams, and those are strong wins. They've been strong. They've been consistent all year. They can put up some big points. I think Alabama right now would be my top seed. Up next, also getting a number one seed, I would put the Houston Cougars. Now, the Cougars win in a completely different way than what Alabama does. They just shut you down defensively. They grind you to death. They make you earn every single point. They have depth so they can wear you out with their bench too. Head coach Kelvin Sampson, he knows how to win games in the tournament. They can flat wear you out. Houston could jump up to that number one overall seed. My concern for the Cougars is their strength of schedule in that American Athletic Conference just isn't quite as strong as some of the bigger conferences. But I think Houston is going to be a one seed. I would give a one seed, at least right now, to the Kansas Jayhawks. They would get my third number one. The Jayhawks lost 3 games in a row just a couple weeks ago. But those losses were all the top 20 teams. And head coach Bill Self, he seems to have already righted that ship. The Jayhawks have now beat number 5 Texas. Oh, and over the weekend, they came back from being down by double digits to pound number 9 Baylor by nearly 20. The Jayhawks look like the top team out of what is probably the best conference in college hoops because the Big 12 is absolutely stacked and the Jayhawks look like the class of that conference. Then I would give the final number one seed to a team that is also struggling a bit, at least lately. They lost 3 of 4 recent games, But I still think the Purdue Boilermakers have done enough over the season to probably earn a number one seed. Big man Zach Edey, he's getting better all the time at both ends of the floor. And even though the Boiler backcourt is young, they're really talented. Purdue dominates the boards at both ends of the floor, though. And that should bode well for them in the tournament. If they can manufacture points, Purdue's going to be a very, very tough out. I think they would get a number one seed. So right now, I would have Alabama, Houston, Kansas, and Purdue getting my top seeds. Beyond those four teams, I think there are a few others out there that will be in contention for a number one seed. Like I said, I believe the Big 12 is the best conference in college basketball this season. If Kansas were to drop a few games down the stretch, I could see the committee taking a hard look at teams like Texas, maybe even Baylor. I would also not count out Tennessee for a number one seed. But the Vols have been kind of up and down lately. They dropped games to Florida, to Vandy, to Kentucky. But then again, they did beat Alabama. They have some impressive wins this year, but Tennessee needs to get hot if they want a number one seed. And then I also think there is a chance for a Pac-12 team to get a number one seed. Did I say Pac-12? That's my bad. I meant Pac-2, because there are really only two decent teams this year in the Pac, and that, of course, is UCLA and Arizona. They both have a chance to get a number one seed, but again, their conference strength might end up hurting them because it's so top-heavy. Hey, March Madness is coming quickly, kids, and with football now over, honestly, I can't wait for it. This tournament is going to be even crazier than usual, because usually, we at least know who the top seeds are. This year, even that is up for debate. Okay, I know the NFL is over. The Super Bowl is over. That is all done. We have nothing exciting to look forward to in the NFL for a little while now. And yet, we also know that the NFL has turned into a 365-day news-producing league. There's always something going on. And even when there's nothing on the immediate horizon, there are also some things to keep in mind that are coming quickly, because the NFL offseason is going to be very interesting to watch. Here are a few questions that we have for what could be a very impactful offseason in the NFL. The first question I have this NFL offseason is, of course, where are all the quarterbacks going to end up? The Las Vegas Raiders have already cut quarterback Derek Carr. They say he has talked to the New York Jets. I believe he'll talk to the New Orleans Saints, the Carolina Panthers, maybe even the Indianapolis Colts. And then if someone like, say, Carr does sign, we start that game of musical chairs and see who gets a seat and who might not. So we'll see where Carr is, and he's not even the top quarterback out there. The Baltimore Ravens have to decide what to do with Lamar Jackson. Do they franchise him? Do they let him walk? That's going to be huge. The Green Bay Packers keep hinting maybe they are tired of the Aaron Rodgers soap opera. Could they deal him to a willing partner? That's possible. The New York Giants have to get a deal done with Daniel Jones. And then we have teams that have quarterbacks, but they're not quite set. Are the Miami Dolphins totally convinced that Tua Tagovailoa is past his injury concerns? Are the Tennessee Titans going to go with Ryan Tannehill again, despite his lack of production? The Seattle Seahawks have to reach a new deal with Geno Smith. There is a lot of quarterback movement that could take place this offseason, and I want to see where some of these quarterbacks end up landing this offseason. Okay, coming back. We have a few more questions to watch this NFL offseason, but then we need to get over to our Daily Dose Top 5. Super Bowl 57 saw the Kansas City Chiefs scrape past the Philadelphia Eagles. But it wasn't without controversy. And it wasn't the first time that we've seen controversy in the big game. So let's finish up with a few questions that we have here at the Daily Dose for the NFL this offseason. And another question that I have is, what will the NFL owners decide to do this year as far as rule changes? We know they do this every year. They go in the spring. A bunch of old white dudes sit in these meeting rooms in Florida, and they say, well, what if we did this? What if we did that? I believe they will need to address teams carrying a third quarterback on their active roster. Hey, we saw in the NFL playoffs, the San Francisco 49ers nearly had to put running back Christian McCaffrey in at quarterback. That's dumb. Just allow teams to carry three quarterbacks. Who cares? I believe that they may vote to ban all of the pushing of ball carriers. I think it's a safety issue. Someone's going to get hurt. We're going to see a knee get blown out. We're going to see a late hit. I believe they'll probably make a rule there. And I won't be surprised if the owners overreact to the DeMar Hamlin injury and to all of the quarterback injuries and put in some dumb new rules to protect players that will actually be overreaching and silly, because that's how those meetings work. That's just what they do every single year. But I am interested to see, what does the NFL do as far as rule changes? I do also have to wonder, what is the NFL going to do about their officiating problems this offseason? Hey, Commissioner Roger Goodell, he can say the league doesn't have an officiating problem, but over the last few seasons, we keep seeing officiating becoming a bigger story than some of the games themselves. And again, hey, this is all fun and games until Las Vegas takes a bath on a bad call. And then Roger Goodell is going to be telling us how good the officiating is while having two busted kneecaps. So does the NFL go to full-time crews? Do they go to more of a full-time training? Do they keep crews together for the postseason instead of breaking it up and doing all-star crews? Do they actually clear up some of their dumb rules? They need to. I'm just not sure if they're going to. The final question that I have for this NFL offseason is another obvious one, but it is one that I can't wait to see the answer to every single year, because where are the top free agents going to end up? We already talked about some of the quarterbacks. We already talked about Lamar Jackson. We already talked about Geno Smith. What about Philadelphia defensive lineman Javon Hargrave? He's a free agent. What about Tampa linebacker Lavonte David? He's a free agent. Chiefs offensive tackle Orlando Brown and 49ers offensive tackle Mike McGlinchey, they are going to be unrestricted free agents. If the right team grabs the right free agent, sometimes that is what puts you over the top and into a position to turn into a contender next season. Hey, the NFL offseason is going to be fascinating to watch. Every year we go, oh yeah, the games are great, Super Bowl is fun, whatever. And then the offseason gets here and you're like, we got a long wait. Yeah, but not that long, because you're going to get the draft. You're going to get free agency. You're going to get franchise player tags, a number of things coming in the NFL that are still going to be very, very fun to keep an eye on. Now, as we do so many weeks here at the Daily Dose, we need to get to our Daily Dose top five. Five! You know, Super Bowl 57 last week was one of the most entertaining Super Bowls in history. Well, at least for like 57 minutes, right? And then the officials made a really impactful, questionable defensive holding call, and suddenly the game was taken out of the players' hands. Game over. The Kansas City Chiefs beat the Philadelphia Eagles. And after the game, yeah, there was talk about the Chiefs' celebration and the Chiefs and how great they were and all that, but there was also a lot of talk about that call. And a lot of talk about the NFL officiating in general. And you just know, the NFL loves that everyone is talking about their game. But they probably don't love as much that everyone was talking about their officiating. And yet, it isn't the first time that a play, or two, or three, or four, as you're going to see, have been questioned in the biggest NFL game of the year. Now, there have been other controversies, no doubt. And yet, if you stop and you think about the most controversial plays in NFL history, you might think about, I don't know, the Immaculate Reception or the Holy Roller or maybe the Music City Miracle. But remember, none of those took place in the actual Super Bowl. Those were in much lesser games. And yet, when you stop and you do think about it, there have been some plays in Super Bowl history that did take the focus a little bit off of the game. And it placed it instead on the people in the stripes that are not supposed to be the story whatsoever. Today, our Daily Dose Top 5 is counting down the top 5 most controversial Super Bowl moments. And I'm not talking about, you know, Janet Jackson or any of that. I'm talking about when the officials got involved probably a little too much. We start off our list at number 5. 5. And we go back just 1 year ago, when the surprising Cincinnati Bengals upset the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game, and they made it to Super Bowl 56, where they would face the favored Los Angeles Rams. Now, if you remember back to this game, you might be saying, well, the refs really didn't throw many flags all day. And you're right, they didn't. They didn't throw many flags at all. And it was a very close, very tight game throughout. Unfortunately, we saw them miss some calls. They just didn't call them. Most of the first half, we saw some calls that, well, maybe they could call that, but they didn't. Hey, they're letting the players play. However, then suddenly flip that in the last few minutes of the game. Out of 6 total penalties in the entire game in Super Bowl 56, 3 of them were called in the final 2 minutes. Bengals wide receiver T. Higgins was clearly held. No call. And then we had another iffy defensive holding call on the Bengals. And that holding call would set up the Rams with first down and goal on the final drive of the game. The Rams would score. They would go on to win 23-20, leaving the Bengals, of course, without a Super Bowl win, and leaving Bengals fans furious at the fact that you haven't made this call all game. Why do you call it now? Now, I'm not sure if the refs changed the outcome of that game, but it was odd that they became so involved in those final moments. It was a little weird. Super Bowl 56 comes in today on our list at number 5. We arrive at number 4, and this is a Super Bowl that was a blowout. It really wasn't that close. There was no question that the best team won Super Bowl 12. The Dallas Cowboys used their doomsday defense to smother the Cinderella Denver Broncos. They completely dominated Denver 27-10. And yet, the next time the NFL Network is showing the highlights from this game, go back and watch the film. The refs did a terrible job. Broncos electric returner, Rick Upchurch, he broke a 67-yard kickoff return early in the game, and it actually set up the Broncos for a field goal. He was dangerous every time he touched the ball. So later in the game, when he had a punt return that it looked like he might break, called back because the ref said he had stepped out of bounds, but the replay showed his foot was probably 3 inches even from the line. Unfortunately, in those days, there was no replay. Then in the fourth quarter, up 20-10, Cowboys quarterback Roger Staubach pitches the ball to fullback Robert Newhouse, who fires a 29-yard pass to receiver Golden Richards, and that put the game away at 27-10, except for one small item. Richards didn't catch the ball. He never caught the ball. But the ref ran in and threw his arms up, even though he couldn't see if Richards had the ball or not. And when you look, the ball's on the ground. Richards stands up and looks for it. But it didn't matter. The ref ruled it a touchdown. And you know why this game doesn't get more attention? For one, like I said, it was a blowout. Two, it was the first Super Bowl that was ever played indoors. And they didn't know how to film it that well. The game footage isn't very good. It's really dark. It's really poor quality. Super Bowl 12, no doubt, was won easily by the best team. But Super Bowl 12 also had the referees with a horrible game. And it comes in today at number 4. We reach number 3. And we go back to Super Bowl 42, which followed the 2007 NFL season, where the wild card New York Giants were going to be served up to maybe the greatest team in NFL history, the loaded, talented, stocked New England Patriots. The Patriots had Tom Brady. They had Randy Moss. They had Bill Belichick. They had that monster defense. They were 18-0. They were expected to go 19-0 over a team in the Giants that had closed out their season losing 4 of their final 8 games. This is going to be a cakewalk. This is going to be easy. Except that it wasn't. The Giants defense shut down that Patriot offense for most of the day. However, with just over a minute to play, the Patriots had a slim 14-10 lead, and Giants quarterback Eli Manning was facing a 3rd-and-5. It might as well be 3rd-and-forever because you've got to go score here. Manning takes a snap. He's under immediate pressure, and he's grabbed not once, but twice. But he escapes the rush. He rolls out. He throws a dart downfield to receiver David Tyree, who makes maybe the greatest catch in Super Bowl history on his helmet while being dragged to the ground by a defensive back. This Giants play is considered to be maybe the greatest play in Super Bowl history. The Giants went on to score the touchdown. They pulled off the improbable upset. And while many thought, this is one of the greatest plays ever, this is one of the greatest finishes ever, this is Super Bowl history, Patriot fans were screaming, referee Mike Carey should have called Eli down in the grasp because he was grabbed, he was held. I don't know that his momentum was ever stopped, but that non-call is still a source of bitterness for Patriot fans. And it comes in today at number 3. We land at number 2. And we know the most recent Super Bowl obviously had controversy. But like I said at the top, this isn't brand new. In fact, our number 2 entry goes way back to the very first Super Bowl in history. Yes, in the very first Super Bowl between the Green Bay Packers and the Kansas City Chiefs, clear back in 1967, we had a massive flub by the officiating crew. And this one was absolutely insane. NBC was so busy interviewing the legend Bob Hope that they forgot to go back to the second half kickoff. They completely missed Don Chandler's kickoff to open the third quarter. So what did they do? Well, CBS sideline reporter Pat Summerall was asked to walk over to Packers head coach Vince Lombardi and tell him what had happened. Having played for Lombardi, Summerall said, I'm not doing that. And finally, the refs had to come out, stop the game, and say, okay, here's what we're going to do. We're going to do another kickoff. We're just going to do a do-over. Imagine that happening today. So they kicked off again, and the game restarted. Why? Because the TV crew forgot to film it. Again, imagine that happening today. Imagine just getting a do-over. Oh, wait. The Chiefs just got a do-over in the AFC Championship game this year. Never mind. The do-over kickoff, though, comes in today at number 2. So we arrive at the number 1 most controversial referee calls in the Super Bowl. And I will preface number 1 by saying this. If I ever do this list in the future, I would probably move this year's Super Bowl ahead of this one at number 1. Because the call in this year's game ended the game. It wasn't like, well, you had that call and then you could have bounced back later. No, it was over. It was over. On that call, the game ended. You could have just shot the gun and said, that's it. But we've already talked about that game and that call at length. So today on our Daily Dose, this is our number 1 entry. If it wasn't bad enough that the Seattle Seahawks had to take on a Pittsburgh Steelers team that finished 3rd in scoring defense and 5th in scoring differential back in Super Bowl 40, they also had to take on some officials that I don't know why, but it kind of seemed like they had it out for them. This was not just one call. This was multiple calls. And the Pittsburgh Steelers would end up getting a 21-10 victory, but there were probably 3, maybe even 4 questionable calls, and they all went in favor of the Steelers. Super Bowl 40 was among the most controversial officiated games in Super Bowl history. An early offensive pass interference call against Seattle took 7 points off the board. We looked at it, and there wasn't really anything there. Later in the game, there was a phantom holding call that took another 7 points from Seattle off the board. And then, in addition, the officials allowed a 1-yard touchdown run by Ben Roethlisberger, and he wasn't even close to being in. And it certainly wasn't close to being conclusive on replay. Overall, like I said, there were probably 3, maybe 4 calls that handed the Steelers 14 points. Now, if you look at the stats, if you just take away the officiating, it looked like Seattle might have won this game. They had 20 first downs to Pittsburgh's 14. They had 396 yards to 339 for the Steelers. But the Steelers got those 3 or 4 favorable calls and won the game pretty easily, 21-10. That comes in today at number 1. Look, I don't buy into the whole games are fixed thing for a few reasons. One, and the most important in my book, Las Vegas issues betting odds. If it was fixed, like the WWE, they wouldn't, because Las Vegas is not in the business of losing money. Two, who all would know if these games were fixed? Like, who all would be in on it? Is it all the players, the coaches, the refs, just some, a few, not everybody? That, to me, would open itself up to somebody's going to tell. It's absolutely impossible to fix these games that way. And yet, you have to include human error coming into play in these games. It does allow, at times, for some very human mistakes to take place. And when they do have an impact on some of these big games. Hey, next week on The Dose, we are going to be looking at some more things that we have to look forward to in the NFL. We also are going to be looking at which teams need to pick up their play if they even want to make it to March Madness. And I'm not talking about no-name mid-majors. I'm talking about blue bloods here. Plus, you know we'll be keeping you up on all that is going on in the world of sports. So be sure you stop by the Daily Dose next week and be sure you let a friend know what you say. I want to say thank you to each and every one of you for listening to the Daily Dose every week. Thank you for the emails. Thank you for the texts. Thank you for the tweets. Thank you for going over to DailyDoseSports.com and checking out the new things going up there every week. But more than anything, thank you for sharing the show, for sharing the videos, for sharing the articles with someone that you know. We absolutely love it when you do that. Have to say thank you to JSP. Could not do any of this without you. I will see you all next Wednesday. Have a great week, everybody.
I've fallen, and I can't get up!